Take the position that the very fact that the child was brought tachas kanfi hashchino constitutes a skus in and of itself. Those are Rav Grobar Tzachron Lavrocha in the Havoli Benimim, Chelish Beis Yerideis Simin Lamed. If you want the reference, it's not in the materials because I'm not talking about this. And the other is the Matel Levi of Rav Hurwitz in Frankfurt Simin Nun Dalit. Those are the materials. On the other hand, there is Nigris Moshe Yerdeich Elakala Simin Kuf Nun Ches. Reb Moshe is Mesupik. He is not Machriya. He says, who says it's a schus for the child? You will find additional material in the Dibris Moshe on Shabbos in the Horus or Yud Aleph. And there is another tshuva in Chelik Dalid of Ibn Ezra and others who take the unequivocal position and maintain that this is not a schus, and therefore the Geirus even b'diyevet is mechal. So despite what may have appeared by individuals writing in the vernacular or even groups that have taken positions on this issue, I don't see how one can escape the conclusion that it's a machlokes among contemporary and relatively contemporary pesukim, and it certainly is in the category of a sveikid dina, with regard to which it's very difficult to be machriya, which quite apart from whatever this may mean in terms of encouraging or not encouraging the adoption per se, but to return to Hilchos Ishus, it means that the Birchas Erusin is a Sofik Brocha at best. Because a problem with being Misadir Kedushin for a child of such an adoption. I'm putting that aside for the moment. We're now not talking about adopting a child and the problem of whether the Gerus is a schus for the child or not, but a problem in Hilchos Ishus, and that is the adoption of Jewish children, which can present very significant problems long before we reach the stage of how to be Mesader Iksuba and how to write the name in Iksuba. Now, first, it's necessary to separate this out into two separate categories. First, I'll deal with private adoptions, and then with agency adoptions. Now, the distinction is very simple. If you just read newspapers, you probably get the impression that there are adoption agencies out there, and any childless couple that wants a child applies to an agency, and they're lucky they get a child. In the real world, I have the distinct impression that the majority, certainly among Jews, the majority of adoptions do not go through agencies. There is a doctor, a lawyer, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, some intermediary who, in one way or another, becomes aware of the fact that there is a child available for adoption. He knows childless couples who wish to adopt a child, and these matters are then arranged without benefit of an agency. Now, there is a certain maila and a certain chesaron, as far as halach is concerned, in private adoptions. First, the chesaron. Reb Moshe in, I don't know if it's in the package, I forgot what I gave you in the package. Reb Moshe in his classic Chuvan adoption maintains, he's talking about adoption of a Jewish child, not of a non-Jewish child. Reb Moshe maintains that adoption is absolutely usur, the way it is generally accomplished by agencies, or in the, I should say, in the manner in which agencies generally accomplish it. I'm not sure it pertains to the agency per se, as I'll explain in a moment. Because the net result is that the identity of the natural parents is suppressed. Chazal forbade a man from having a wife in several courts, having families who do not know of one another's existence, Shem Ois Office of Fesai, and the Gemara cites a posik, Lazarecha Acharecha, we require Zera that's Miyuchas Acharov. Reb Moshe analyzes the Suki and says that the Yisr is an Yisr Dereis. Of course, Chazal made a Gzeira in order to implement the Yisr Dereis, to prevent people from being over the Yisr Dereis. But it's Lav Dafki creating a situation in which you have different families who don't know of one another's existence. Anything that can lead to an incestuous sibling relationship, says Reb Moshe, is a violation of the Dereis of Lazarecho Acharecho. Therefore, any act that would tend to suppress the identity of natural parents, the identity of the of or of the aim, is also, at least until very, very recently, and indeed even until today, It is the general practice of agencies to prevent adopted children from ever learning the identity of their natural parents. The whole idea of adoption, going back to Roman law, which is the basis of the mores of contemporary society, certainly weren't borrowed from halacha, that's for sure. The whole notion of adoption was to sever the old bonds totally and completely and to create an entirely new paternal, maternal, familial relationship. In this country, the courts are now much more liberal with regard to these matters. They're willing to unseal records, etc. In some cases, it may be possible to discover the identity of natural parents, but it's clear that adoption, as it is customarily practiced by agencies, etc., is an attempt to suppress the identity of the natural parents, and Rav Moshe says that's also not just parenthetically. I began by saying I'm talking about adoptions as they are conducted, carried out by agencies, but I'm not absolutely certain that the issue applies to an adoption from an agency. On the contrary, it seems to me that once the adoptive parents receive the child from the agency, the identity of the natural parents has long since been suppressed. The agency has already done it, has done it before giving the child to the adoptive parents, and the adoptive parents at that point are simply taking custody of a child who no longer knows the identity of its natural parents, is in no position to find out. I'm not at all certain that in real life it is the adoptive parents who are being geirim the Yisrael Zarech HaTarecho, although certainly the officials of the adoption agency are involved in that prohibition, according to Rav Moshe's analysis. I'm not really concerned with the shaila of whether adoption is mutar or aser. The point I'm trying to make is that private adoptions have a definite maila over agency adoptions, in that in a private adoption, it is possible to both have one's cake and eat it too. That is, not to suppress the identity of the natural parents, and at the same time, not to inform the child of the identity of the natural parents. If the psychologist and the social workers and whoever else is interested in these things is absolutely opposed to doing so. And that is because if you're dealing with an agency, agencies, particularly in the New York metropolitan area, aren't even so-called Jewish agencies, aren't terribly concerned about halacha or the considerations of halacha and tend not to be cooperative. But when you're dealing with a private adoption, it's not at all difficult to interview the mother for the rov and two other people to go, and for her to be made bisnei bezdin lekosher nivalti. What is required essentially is for her to identify the father, and it need not necessarily be by name. What is required essentially is that she indicate that the father was someone who is not a mamzer, not a close relative, such that there would be an incestuous relationship. And then for the bezdin to write a maisa bezdin and to deliver it to the child, or better, to the child's adoptive parents, and to indicate in that maisa bezdin that before the child marries, the child must check with the members of the bezdin to determine that the prospective marriage partner is not someone who is forbidden to him by halacha. Now, all that the rov has to do is take a copy of this piece of paper, a simple Xerox, and on the reverse side of this piece of paper, indicate the names and addresses of all relatives at the time of the adoption whom this child is not permitted to marry, the krevi ha'im and the krevi ha'ov, if applicable. It will turn out, in more cases than not, to be the case that the father is non-Jewish, in which case there are no krevi ha'ov. But assuming that the father is also Jewish, you simply write down the names and addresses of the crazy name, the crazy off. How many can there be? The brothers, the parents, the grandparents, the uncles, the aunts, who knows, whatever, depends upon the sex, male or female, and you have eliminated the problem of Lazarus.
The mother would have to mention the name of the
it's sufficient that she identify in a manner such that it is known that the individual is not someone who is false of the goal, or someone who, as the father of this child, would render the child a false of the goal. In other words, as long as she says, no, I know the husband was a nice Jewish boy, or at least he was nice on all other occasions except this, and he's not the product of a second marriage. There's no problem with it yet as far as his parents are concerned, and no, he was not one of my relatives, and you make a drish of a sekira. Find out she knows exactly what she's saying, and she has said, Lakoshin of Alti. She doesn't have to mention him by name if she doesn't want to, but chances are that if she's assured of confidentiality, she will even identify it. Oh, if you're worried about the Krei Vegel, well, if she doesn't identify him, then I don't see any issue in adopting the child, because the act of adoption is not Mishakas, the Yichus, as far as the father is concerned. You know who the mother is. At any point later, the mother, if still alive, can be interrogated. Either way, if she is suppressing paternal identity, she is doing it, not the adoptive parent, and certainly not the Bezdin. I can't see how that involves an Isser on the part of those individuals. I just don't see the Isser. Whatever she is refusing to disclose, she's going to refuse to disclose, even if nobody takes the child. You know, even if the child is left as a foundling someplace. So that the adoptive parents and the Bezdin are not being involved in anything that suppresses paternal identity.
And what is done with the document?
I think that each member of the Bezdin should put it in a safe deposit box, and when requested to do so, consult the document in order to provide whatever information is necessary to assure that the chuppah can be entered into kedin. Yes.
20-30 years later.
Yes. Well, I mean, presumably, rabbonim know what to do with records. Yes. I'm sorry, Lara.
Even if the parents, the adoptive parents, are borrowing the history, shouldn't this be contended from their attorney's death? Even if they are gearing the problem. Even if they're not, they don't cause the problem, so shouldn't there still be contended their attorney's death?
That's what we're going to talk about in a moment. That's the problem with Shtuki. This is not a new problem by any means. You have a penuyo who becomes a muberes, and the child is born, and now we have problems. First of all, we don't know who the father is. The child may be a mamzer. And as you're pointing out, there's also a question of Shem Yisra HaFeisa. Shem Yisra HaFeisa, there's the principle of Rosh. The majority of the world are not people this child cannot marry. Therefore, La'achar HaMaisa, the Yehud. If the child grows up and does know the identity of the parents, there is the principle of roi. Nevertheless, there is the takonos chazal. Chazal say that the mother must declare lekosher nivalti, and that was the point of this interrogation and the maisa bezdin. I just want to make one point parenthetically, and that is that if you look in the Yitzhar Peskin Misimin Dalit, there is a machlokes hafeiskim with regard to whether lekosher nivalti requires a bezdin or not. That's why I earlier said that the rov should take two other people and constitute a bezdin for purposes of interviewing the mother. The Yitzhar Peskin quotes a late Yehuda. I'm not aware of who that is. And there is also a tshuva in the Bris Avraham, which is a known, say, person in Yud, both of whom maintain that lekosher nivalti requires a hagodah bifnei bezdin. And frankly, if they didn't say it, I would have said it, because shalei bifnei bezdin is mishat anibo. What's to prevent her from joking? What's to prevent her from later from saying it didn't take it seriously, etc., etc.? Nevertheless, the Yitzhar HaFeiskim also quotes another Akron, who again I do not recognize, a Maharam Bach, who says that this hagodah need not be bifnei bezdin. There's the Minchas Yitzchok of Rav Weiss, the final of Rav Weiss, Rav Weiss says, L'chatil of Bifnei Bezdin, the Dievet even, Shaloi Bifnei Bezdin. The only caveat I would add is that if Shaloi Bifnei Bezdin is good enough, but certainly it has to be a Hagodah which is taken seriously by the mother. Not something that is said in a flippant or a frivolous manner. I mean, she has to be aware of the fact that she's making a statement and that the statement is important for whatever reason. Statements that are made for self-serving interests, I don't think would qualify as a statement for anybody. And in many of these adoption situations, so you can readily understand that the statements are self-serving, so that unless the woman is made aware of the fact that this is a serious business and she carries a responsibility, I don't see how a statement could be accepted.
Well, yes.
By definition, you can't say Mishat Anibok in front of a bezdin. But even if you don't have a technical requirement of the desk, the people have to know that this is serious.
But if the person, if the mother is not a religious woman, and she's completely not into, she doesn't care about Yiddish guys, and that's the sort of thing, and it's not a case that there's an accident, is it? Now, she doesn't really care about a Beis Din. What does she care about a Beis Din? It's got no legal standing as comparatively to a court, as a regular civil court. Why would that be something serious to make her take it seriously and amnestic? If you can't rely on her as an aide in the first place.
That's true enough. I mean, you're raising a very important point, and that is that the woman herself isn't kosher. She herself is postulated, right? And Chazal said, the kosher nevality is good enough. Again, I will not say that I have gone through all of the Achronim and all of the Tshuvas dealing with these things in general, but I'm not aware of anyone saying that a Psula who has Nemonis to say Lakosha Nevalti does not have Nemonis if, for example, she's a Mumer L'Teyoba, let alone a Mumer L'Hachas. I'm not aware of distinctions between or Rosh HaDechomos or whatever. I'm not aware of distinctions between women who would be kosher if not for the Psulisha and women who would be possible for other reasons. Apparently, Chazal were Misakin, whatever they could be Misakin. They were Misakin that she say Lakosha Nevalti, and they did not check the qualifications of this woman who was anyway postulated and her best is in the Dafa to start with. This is, you know, it's a Heimomer of Heimomer. You're dealing with it, Hakonos Kachomim. You're dealing with Nisra Sufi, which is Nisra Rabbanon, and apparently that's all that they required. But no, I makes it sense to say that they require you to have a Beis Din, for example, so the woman knows it's serious. And if you say not a Beis Din, but at least that the woman should recognize that this is not a joke, that this is a serious matter, and to respond in that light. Yes? You see, that's the real problem. What do you do 25 years later when either the woman is not alive or the adoption agency will not tell you who she is, so you can't interview her? And they have also provided you, for argument's sake, with a statement which she made, Shaloi B'Fnei Beis Din. They tell you that she has told them the question about her. Now, we'll talk about more about that later, but it is not uncommon to be involved in an agency adoption in which the agency tells you that they have interviewed the woman, Shaloi B'Fnei Beis Din, obviously, they're not a Beis Din, and that the woman says, this child was the product of a liaison with a nice Jewish boy who comes from a happily married family, etc., etc., was not a relative. In effect, she has said the question about if it was better. Can you accept that at all? Now, I'm not going to talk... Precisely. I'm not now talking about the moments of the agency. I was dealing with it in terms of a private adoption, and that's why I advise that who needs problems, take two other people, your Beis Din, interview the woman, let her say Lakosha Nevalti or equivalent, and then you have something which has no shilas at all. Kosher l'chatzila. Remember last time I said we're dealing with l'chatzilas to the extent possible. Deal with l'chatzilas, and then the b'dievis, we can worry about some other time. We'll soon have to come to some of the b'dievis, because in many of these cases, there's no woman, there's no l'chatzila nevalti, there's nothing, there's only an agency. And the agency doesn't always have even the statement of the mother to the effect of l'chatzila nevalti. Does the agency even ask? That depends. It depends on the agency. It depends upon the circumstances.
But they're not going to ask her mom. They're going to ask her
mom. Again, it depends where you are and what the involvement of the rod is. Certainly, if you're dealing contemporaneously at the time of the adoption, particularly if you're not in the city of New York, and there's a personal relationship between the rabbi and the agency, the federation, etc., and the rabbi asks the agency, would you please contact the mother and ask her a few questions, it's inconceivable to me that the agency should refuse to do this. The agency would accommodate. This is not a breach of confidentiality, presumably, assuming that the mother is not a person who has various problems that they don't want to exacerbate. Why in the world should they not contact the woman to ask the questions? Particularly if they know that you're going to ask this in advance, they will do it as a matter of routine if you request them to do it in all Jewish adoptions. They can, you know, there's a few more lines on a form if you can get their cooperation in advance.
You look at a situation where adoption agencies, if they are not government agencies, they're private agencies, they can go out of business and they can disappear as well.
Well, of course, that can always happen.
In which case, then your record is different to you. That's why you have to do the time of adoption and not the time of...
Well, all of this should be done at the time of the adoption, not 20 or 25 years later, for obvious reasons. Now, let me then talk a little bit about the problems associated with agency adoptions. There are problems in terms of halacha with agency adoptions, and there are problems with private adoptions. The private adoptions present what I earlier spoke about in terms of the agency and Reb Moshe in Lezarecha Acharecha. If the parents fail to make these inquiries at the time of the private adoption, they are the Rav, who is the Seer, if indeed he is, then they are the ones who are in violation of Lezarecha Acharecha. That becomes the Chesor. If you don't do this, that's really suppressing paternal identity, and there I see that you're right within the parameters of the Yisr Lezarech HaKarefa. On the other hand, as far as the Yisr Shtuki is concerned, it's relatively easy to eliminate the problem of the Shtuki in a private adoption, whereas in terms of an agency adoption, we'll now proceed to talk. Yes?
What about South American adoptions that people are doing today, where it's impossible to find out who the parents are? But because of all of them, there are enough Jews.
The South American adoptions are private adoptions. Those always operate through an intermediary. Now, the intermediary may not be Jewish. He may be a South American lawyer. But it is definitely possible to determine the identity of the South American parents. There's no problem determining their identity. Most people don't want to know who they are. But if you want to know who they are, you can find out who they are. In general, they're non-Jews. Those are usually, in South America, there are always non-Jewish children that are being surrendered for adoption. That presents only the Gerus problem and the problems we spoke about a little bit before, and that can be readily determined. I was speaking until now specifically with Jewish adoptions, of which there are very, very few, although the ones that there exist, they tend to concentrate in frum circles because Jews, when they adopt, try to find Jewish children, and for those reasons, you find more of those in the Orthodox community. And those are I can't say that they're mice in the whole yoin, but I have been actively involved in at least three in the last 2 years. I mean, the not the adoption, but shilas with regard to psulei kohol at the time of the marriage. All right, let me then proceed to talk about agency adoptions, situations in which a child is adopted. The agency tells you that the mother was Jewish, the father was Jewish, or the father was not Jewish, but assures you that you're dealing with a Jewish child, or a situation in which there has been an adoption and there is simply no mother to interview, and we have the problem of a possible shtuki. Let me just backtrack a little bit. The first question with regard to agency adoptions, before we come to the question of shtuki, is whether or not we don't really have an asufi problem. An asufi is a situation in which the identity of neither the mother nor the father is known. A shtuki is a situation in which the identity of the mother is known. It's only the identity of the father that is not known. An agency adoption is certainly, to borrow a phrase that Reb Moshe Safran Lavrocha used in a different context, it's certainly an asufi bimitsius. Whereas an asufi in halacha is another matter which we'll talk to in a second. But the agency baby, the child placed by an agency, is a foundling by definition. The agency has a baby, and the agency, assuming the agency doesn't know the identity of the parents, or the agency won't tell you the identity of the parents, they'll provide no information whatsoever, you have then what is in effect, as far as the parents are concerned, an asufi. Now, what about the halacha of asufi? Asufi, in terms of halacha, is a sofik mamzer. However, if you look in Siman Dalet, Sif Lamed Aleph, you will find that there are many foundlings that don't have a halacha of an asufi. Whenever measures have been taken to preserve the life and well-being of the child does not have a halacha of an asufi. One of the examples given is that the child is found in the Beis HaKnesses. If the child is found in the Beis HaKnesses, it means he was put there because the natural parents want somebody to find the child and to provide a home for it. So under those circumstances, there is not a presumption that the child is a mamzer. The presumption is that the child was disposed of in this manner because the parents were incapable of supporting it. Machmas rave. They weren't able to support it, so they wanted somebody else to find it. When you find a child mushlak bishuk and he's left exposed to die, as it were, there Chazal refers to the child is a mamzer. The child placed by an adoption agency is a child that has been surrendered to the adoption agency. It's not a child that has been found in a garbage can someplace, and if yes, it's something you can find out very quickly. The net result is that the asufi problem is not really a significant problem. It's not a serious problem because the adoption agency is no worse than a child that's found in the Beis HaKnesses. If you find the child in the Beis HaKnesses, you presume it doesn't have the din of asufi was the parents wanted it to be preserved. The child found in the adoption agency presumably was placed with the adoption agency, and there was no intent that it die of exposure or starvation. One second. Now, in a case so that you do not have the din asufi, which is a sofik mamzer. Now, if you have a sufi b'mitzius without the din asufi, then in an ir sheruba akum, the child has a din of an akum and requires gerus. In an ir sheruba yisrael, there is still a din of an asufi, and there may be a kind of requirement for gerus even under those circumstances, but that need not concern us, since in Chutz Lares, I don't know of any city which is an ir sheruba akum. The net result is that the child would have the halacha of an akum. Now, as I will point out in a moment, that turns out to be a kulin. If it doesn't have the din of an asufi, and you're able to definitively declare the child to be an akum, because it's an ir sheruba akum, of course it requires gerus. But there is no longer any question of psulei kohol, and there will be no problem of yichus afterwards. I will then, after taking the questions, turn to the situation in which the adoption agency assures you that they know that this is a Jewish child, meaning that the mother was Jewish, which at least ostensibly will complicate the situation. Now, that may sound paradoxical, but it certainly complicates the situation. I'll try to analyze that in a second. Yes? Clearly, when the state removes the child from the parents, you're not dealing with a sofik mamzer. The state has removed it not for purposes of exposing the child and allowing it to die, but in order to provide for the welfare of the child. Now, that's the principle. When you have any simon to the effect that the child was not left to die, the child doesn't have to be in a sufi of a sofik mamzer.
But the state has to remove the child from the parents. I mean, the parents were keeping the child in the state where the child was.
No, but the parents weren't trying to kill the child. They were just derelict in their responsibilities. And the state doesn't trust them anymore. But the parents certainly don't want the child to die. You know, even parents who abuse children, they beat them, etc. The parents don't want the child to die. The parents are drunks, the parents are drug addicts, or samishigoy, whatever they are. But if you'll ask them, they will tell you they know that they don't intend to harm the child. It's just that they can't be trusted with this child any longer. Either they're incapable or whatever, and the state and its guise as parents patriae will step in and remove the child from the parents as the ultimate guardian of the parents, the ultimate apotropos. Yes? With an ir sheruba yisrael, it may not. The ir sheruba akum may have a din of an akum. In ir sheruba akum, you have to be done. The child is an akum,
even though it's different in the right
now. Maybe. We have to analyze that very carefully. Certainly, the other simoni would still leave the child as an akum. All right, let me then talk about the situations in which the agency will tell you that this child is Jewish, i.e., the child had a Jewish mother. Now,
finding a child
no, that's a shtuki. I mean, the adoption agency has told you it's got a Jewish mother. We just don't know who the father is.
When you find a child with the Yeshua B'Sar, you're assuming that the child's parents are Jewish also.
Yes.
So it
Hold
to have Matthias
what? Certainly for Christ.
A lot of it should be the same situation. That when you find a child with the Yeshua B'Sar,
right.
Or when you have a case of a shtuki.
Are you asking why near should be Yisrael, the child does not have din of a shtuki? It's a good question. I'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later.
You mentioned after the mother.
Yes.
What about if the adoption agency knows both parents and the father is Jewish, not the mother?
So you have a non-Jewish child. You
I have a non-Jewish halacha, but can that child marry a Jewish child from the father? Joe Schmo has an illicit relationship with the Gracia woman.
Right.
She has a child.
Right.
Meanwhile, he and his wife also have children.
You're complicating it. You're telling me that there was a non-Jew who has sired a Jewish child. Now, if you want to know whether that child is mother to a non-Jewish sibling.
No. It's a Jewish sibling. Okay, is the child of a man, a Yiddish man with a Goyish...
He had two Jewish...
He had a Jewish child and he had a Goyish child because he had an affair with a non...
He had an affair with two Jewish girls, no?
No. He had a Jewish child, his wife.
Right.
Okay, that's one child.
Right.
He had an affair with some other woman and he had another child. Can those two children later on marry?
Let's not get off on a tangent. That's not the adoption question. You're asking the question of Gerus and whether the child of a non-Jew, Achar Gerus, is permitted to Kravim who don't have any Yichus as far as Allah is concerned. That ends in the question of Kedusha Chamur, Kedusha Kala. Leave that. That'll get us off into a tangent. Hold it. Let's stick to the problem of adoption when we have a child who the adoption agency tells us had a Jewish mother and hence is a Jewish child. That is squarely the shtuki problem. The adoption agency has told you, in effect, that this child is a shtuki. Now, the adoption agency will then tell you one of two things. The adoption agency will tell you that either the father is a Jew and is a kosher, or the adoption agency will tell you that the father was non-Jewish because the mother has told them it's non-Jewish. In effect, she's saying lekosher nivalti as far as psule kol is concerned, albeit not for psule kuhumet, because the child of a non-Jewish father and a Jewish mother is akuma bo avas yisrael of lad kosher. And the chuvas that I've given you deal essentially with the problem of a shtuki, and I've given you the only serious chuvas that I'm aware of that deal with the issue, and believe it or not, there are very few. And Lania Saiti, none of them deals with the matter in a rather comprehensive way. And it is this shaila which occurs not infrequently, particularly within the Orthodox community, where you have a Jewish mother who is not here, usually because the adoption was handled through an agency, or because nobody thought of asking her lekosher nivalti or not at the time of the adoption, and now she is not available to be interviewed. What is the status of the child under those circumstances? Let me talk about the adoption agencies for a moment. Again, I cannot document this because it's not in writing, but in one of the tshuvas, if I remember, there's a reference to a Rav Echad America who said that the adoption agencies have nemonis, and if they tell you that the father was a non-Jew, they are nemon to say that the father was a non-Jew. I presume that their nemonis cannot be greater than the nemonis of the people from whom they have heard this information, and since certainly they did not have a yeshivas bezdin, this then must also be accepting the principle that lekosher nivalti shloi bifnei bezdin is sufficient, because otherwise the agency doesn't hear lekosher nivalti either. Yes.
Perhaps not, that even you need on the level of business, because the ocean business is to show that it's a serious matter and make her not say that later on, she's joking. If the agency comes down, you have to represent her right.
No, if there's a requirement for business, requirement for best and dafkin. If it's what something else I was talking about, then yes, I presume that the agency, or at least I hope, that the agency acts in a professional manner, and that they've impressed upon the mother the seriousness for this information, and that they've gotten it under those circumstances. But it's clearly not a bezdin. If you need bifnei bezdin, then it's not a hakodah bifnei bezdin. But that's not the point I want to make. Yes. I'm not sure that I trust the agency for anything, but I think your point is very well taken. I'm going to come back to precisely that point in a little bit. The statement that I quoted to you and that I have certainly heard orally in the name of various Merihiroi is that the agency has nemonis with regard to these matters. I presume the nemonis is in the category of nemenes chayaleimar. A midwife has nemonis to say that this child is a kohen, this child is a levi, etc., etc. Gemara Kedushin da ayin gimel omid beis. I probably should spell it out. I'm assuming that the adoption agency are people who otherwise are not kosher leibus. And I'm not aware of any adoption agency in this country that has personnel exclusively who are kosher leibus. That's presumed that we're dealing with people who are otherwise not kosher leibus. And then the category of nemonis has to be in the category of nemenes chayo loimar. My problem with that is in several different areas. First of all, the Ran, and if you want the citation, you can look in Tazim and Dalas Iskoten Chof. The Taz says the nemonis of the Chaye is only a nemonis midrabonon because yesher bin yinachem. Now, I don't want to analyze what the status would be without any Hagodah whatsoever in the case of the Shtuki. The Ran clearly says that the Nemonis is only a Nemonis midrabonon, and he says a Tam, why they believe the Chayot. And that's true. I mean, it's absolutely true. Even we sophisticated people that we believe ourselves to be. The identity of any child who is brought home from a hospital is traced to the nurse and to nobody else. If not for the nurse, how do you know that this child is the one that was delivered to this woman? There have been cases reported in the newspaper periodically of mix-ups that have occurred in hospitals, and today it is possible to prove such things on the basis of blood tests, the basis of DNA testing, etc., etc. And of course, everybody will tell you that immediately, as soon as the child is born, you take a footprint and you put it on the hospital record. But who took the footprint? How do you know it's the footprint of the child that was delivered to this mother? The nurse, in putting the foot on the ink pad and then the foot back onto this piece of paper, is giving you the Haggadah. She is telling you that this is the child that came from this woman. And there are a multiple number of women delivering at any one time in any major hospital. Even under the best of circumstances, mix-ups can and do occur. But basically, one is relying on the nemonis of the Chaya. And it's Yesher being Yenacher. That is what the Ran is saying. However, insofar as the adoption agency is concerned, I am not sure that it is E-F-Shir bin Yinachir. When you're dealing with the act of delivery and you need a Haggadah immediately to find out whose child this is, it's E-F-Shir of them through the midwife. If you're dealing with adoption agencies and questions with them on with regard to who delivered the baby to the adoption agency, it certainly is E-F-Shir bin Yinachir. I'm not sure that the adoption agency qualified as the Chayy of the Gemara. This Rav Echov and the various apocryphal stories that exist, or the apocryphal Piskei Din that extend the nemonis of the Chayy to the adoption agency, regard the adoption agency as being some kind of Chayy, being some kind of midwife. I frankly don't understand that. Secondly, let me just finish. There is one, I'm not sure it's in the fact, it probably isn't. In one of the many tshuvas in which Rav Moshe speaks about conservative and reform clergy, and says, and this tshuva in particular, the tshuva in which he says, Kol shemesis shem conservative al atzmois befestus mumer, Rav Moshe was talking about a rabbi who served as the middleman, the intermediary for purposes of arranging an adoption, and makes the unequivocal statement that he does not have nemonis. Rav Moshe clearly was rejecting the argument that the intermediary is a chayav. I'm not aware of a tshuva in Rav Moshe that says that the conservative Rebbetzin, who's a midwife in the hospital, doesn't have nemonis. The female graduate of a conservative seminary who serves as a midwife in the hospital presumably would have nemonis of a chaya, but it does not extend to her when she acts in the capacity of a sirsur or as a religious social worker for an adoption agency who is certifying to these facts. And I think the reason is very simple. The Ran simply doesn't apply. Now, in addition to that, the nemonis of achayus seems to be analogous to the nemonis associated with an woman who is lemaru mosre. The chayo has no reason to lie and every reason not to lie. The chayo does not want her professional reputation to be impugned. She is certainly not going to purposely mislead individuals. As distinct from a situation in which there is self-interest involved in the declaration which is made. Jewish, in quotation marks, Jewish adoption agencies certainly have every reason in the world to claim that their clients are Jews, if for no other reason to justify their existence and their subventions from the Jewish community. Therefore, I suspect that they should be in the category of individuals who cannot be trusted because Lashbiach Mekom, they are saying whatever they are saying. It certainly enhances the product that they are selling. And I know this is a quasi-commercial enterprise. This is a professional organization, to be sure, but there's a lot dependent upon its services and services that it is able to perform for the community. And it would seem to me that the agency should not have nemonis. However, having said that, I will make another statement. The first question.
The agency has a rogue, and he has interviewed the mother, and he's an animal.
Right? So you have an Eidecha who is an animal. Very good. I mean, at least you have that. No. If he is the one who has interviewed the mother and she has said, Lakosha Navalti, so we have an Agode Chuslebesen of Lakosha Navalti, and if the roles has his wits about him, he can easily take two other people who are caring and have her repeat the statement, and he has a business, so he has something to do with.
No.
Adoption agencies don't have Rabbonim on staff, unfortunately.
No,
they just don't.
If
you happen to have a firm social worker who is running an adoption agency, he certainly can do all of this in the way that should be. Having said all of that, nevertheless, it seems to me, and incidentally, Rav Eliyashu, for example, again, I hate to say things bal peh when but I have no choice when there's nothing in writing. Rav Eliyashu is also the opinion that the non-Jewish Jews do not have nemonis, v'tzeiris nemonis. But having said that, it seems to me that this is really a cool. Saying that they don't have nemonis is in effect saying that the child is under any and all circumstances an asufi without the psul asufi, which is the flip side of the statement that was made by the gentleman there a minute ago. You called it a feshos, a feshihiter. I don't call it a feshos, a feshihiter. I say they have no nemonis to tell me lakosh nevalti, and they also have no nemonis to tell me that the mother was Jewish. If they have no nemonis to tell me the mother was Jewish near Shrub Akum, then I have a child who, for purposes of halacha, is a goy, but a goy kosher. All that is required is a tefillah, and you have a ger. And this child, again, if the agency has no nemonis, and it's an ir shruv ba'akum, which it is in chutz laretz, then it would seem to me that the gerus isn't gerus l'chumra, but it's gerus mitzad hadin. So that the first grounds to be matir, the child who is adopted through an agency, b'kohol, is on the basis of nemonishah. Either the nemonis of the agency, if it tells you that the mother was Jewish and lakosher nivalo, or its lack of nemonis. Either way, the child seems to me to be kosher. If the agency has nemonis, and they tell you the kosher nivala, or that the father was a goy, which is another way of saying the same thing, then the child is mutar b'kol, and if they have no nemonis, then they have no nemonis in the first instance, they cannot tell you the mother was Jewish, in which case, mitzad halacha, the child has the din of a goy, in which case you're megayer him, and the child has a din of a Yisroel kosher. Again, parenthetically, I just want to make the point. This notion of gerus, when everybody insists that the mother was Jewish, should not be terribly shocking. First of all, it's a problem that comes up in other areas, and this will be a tangent on it. Tila, they're sherry. Otherwise, you have the problem of psulei kol, which has to be dealt with in a different way. But if they're Jews, then you have the real problems of psulei kol. In this context, to say that the child is requires gerus isn't all as great a chiddush as it may be, because even if atma bo bas yisrael is lot kosher, there are a significant number of achrenim who maintain that kosher means a goy kosher. It means a not a manzer, but still requires tefillah. Now, I don't know if you've covered this in the Chasmila, but there are many achrenim who maintain that such a child should not be circumcised on Shabbos because the child has the din of a non-Jew, the din of a ger, so that to require, quote, gerus lechumra, quote, in such circumstances isn't so inordinate and so out of line to start with. That's why, among the other considerations, why I don't think that one should shrink from a conclusion that says that the child that is procured through an adoption agency requires gerus. At least lechumra, and I would argue that gerus mitzad adin if they have no nemonis. So that's the first tzad to be matir, and that may be sufficient in and of itself. Let me go on to other tzadim to be matir, other considerations, other concerns. And I'm making point number two not so much for the gerus case, and I certainly don't mean to be exhaustive or definitive, but it involves a principle that will be beneficial, shall I say, in other cases as well, in other cases that really pose very difficult problems. And that is when the question of yichus becomes known many years later, when it is assumed by everyone that the child has no problems at all. In the adoption situation, I will assume that now somebody wants to get married, the child is 20, 25 years old, and they, in the prenuptial interview, disclose that the child is adopted. The child may not have known that it was adopted until you begin asking the questions of the parents, in which case the parents disclose the fact that there was adoption, or even if the child had been told that he was adopted at some earlier stage, but nobody in the community knows that the child was adopted. You can have a similar shaylin in terms of the point that I want to make, if you suddenly discover before the klipah that the child's mother was a convert and that the bezdin that performed the gerus was a bezdin of conservative clergy whose gerus is invalid, even if there was mila tzila and kabbalah tariyak mitzvahs plus. The conversion is invalid, not because they're from Balthasis, but because a mumer is not a member of a bezdin. A mumer is posel lahoy and posel lodain, and therefore cannot serve as a member of a bezdin. Now you've got a problem. The problem is that the child isn't Jewish. Now, of course, that problem is relatively easy to solve. There are mikvahs available, and you can undergo a new gerus. Now, that may be rather problematic, but the point I want to make, lahalokha v'loy l'maisa, I'm making the point simply to draw your attention to it and its ramifications and for further analysis some other time, since it's already late, and that is that in both of these cases, you are dealing with a situation in which there is already a cheskas yahadus and a cheskas kashrus. Malkin the silkin ala hazoka is v'nochor hachereho b'shuk establishes prima facie evidence of a relationship which is then used for purposes even of administering Kiyiv Mitzvahs Bezdin. That's a cheskas hanhoge. If there is a chazoke that the individual is A, a Jew, B, that's a Yisrael kosher, and in this case see that it is the child of these individuals, I can conceive of situations in which my citation of v'no koruch acharecho wasn't simply a paradigm, but was intended literally. What will happen is you have a problem of makov, if maki imai, and then afterwards this nautilus is, it's not my parent, I'm only an adopted child. The answer is that if you have a proper chazokah, Bezin is going to ignore that. The chazokah established the relationship, and after all this period of time, no individual can come connect to the chazokah. No individual can say that it's not really a child. This can have ramifications way beyond questions of a chuppah or a siddur kedushin or what have you. Yes? No, 280 are never connected to the chazokah. That's usually not the case. You usually don't have two Edim Sherim who tell you, I know that this is not the natural child of this woman. First of all, how could the Ed ever testify, I know it's not the natural child of this woman? It's virtually impossible. We watched her 24 hours a day and we know she didn't give birth, so therefore it can't be her child. But you know, in normal circumstances, you are not going to have Edim who will be made that the child is adopted. In normal circumstances, when it's not known in the community, of course, there can be people, if it's known in the community that this was an adopted child, then this is a no kohakarel. Then it's yodua that the child is not a natural child, hence there is no chazoket to start with. But when it is assumed by everybody in the community that this is a natural child, and it's the parent, the adoptive parent, or the putative adoptive parent who says, I am not a natural father or a natural mother, this is a person who is now being made keneged v'chazoket. And it seems to me that the person should not have nemonis keneged v'chazoket under those circumstances. Now, their objections. That was... Okay, I'll come to the document in a second. The first objection is that a father has nemonis to say that v'nizeh mamzer. A father does have nemonis with regard to a child. However, if you look in Simen Dalet Sifchof Tes, a father does not have nemonis to say that this is not my child if he has previously said this is my child. By the time you come to the chuppah, I suspect that the father has already declared to the school authorities, if to nobody else, that this is my child. And even though he has an amasla of whatever kind, it seems to me that if you look in the Ramon Simen Dalet Sifchof Tes, the Ramon is saying that the reason that a father can't be chazer, and it seems to me even al yidei amasla, although it's not spelled out in the Ramon, is because the original Haggadah of the father has created the Chazoket. Once there's a chazoket that it's benoi, he has no nemonis to negate the chazoket, even though the chazoket came from his own testimony ad initio. Once there is the chazoket, the father doesn't have nemonis. Secondly, somebody said, what about the birth certificate? He'll pull out a birth certificate, which will indicate that he is not the natural father. Fine. Was there a question before we go on? The birth certificate now is connected to the chazokah. We have a chazokah that tells me that this is the person's child, the birth certificate that says it isn't. It seems to me that the birth certificate at best, the birth certificate has the status of Arkoyis Shal Akum. And the question is, what is the status of Arkoyis Shal Akum? In point of fact, I don't think that a birth certificate means anything as far as halacha is concerned. I don't think it's even arkoyis shel akum for the very simple reason that the court is not testifying that what is in the birth certificate is true. Anybody can get a birth certificate. It's the easiest thing in the world. All you have to do is file an application, present the information, and back comes a stamped and sealed document that regurgitates the information that you have provided. The official who issues the birth certificate is not necessarily certifying that what is in the certificate is true. It's like the Tudat Zehut that comes in Eretz Yisrael that says this person is a Jew, but that the statement is a Jew has no meaning in terms of halacha. We are not certifying that the person is what he says he is. A birth certificate is really not a certification that what is in the document is true. It's simply confirming that the allegation has been made to the authorities and that they are in effect rubber stamping information that's been given to them. But all right, forget that. I'd be willing. I know. Well, no, people take it very seriously. People think, you know, they think it's a capital crime to falsify information applying for birth certificates. I mean, you know, people do take a birth certificate very seriously. They take it seriously in applying for it, and the birth certificate itself is, in our society and in the legal system which we find ourselves, is taken extremely seriously. With a birth certificate, you can create a whole false identity. It's done every day of the week. People know how to do these things. With a birth certificate, you get yourself a social security number. With a social security card plus a birth certificate, you get a driver's license. And with those, you can get all kinds of things. You get a passport, and you're in business. You're whoever you claim you are, and nobody has been made anything. It's all, you know, one flows from the other. You can build up identities on this, and I submit that for purposes of halacha, none of that is the statement of our kodesh. It doesn't rise to the statement of our kodesh, whatever the credibility of our kodesh may have for purposes of halacha. I won't press that point. I'm perfectly willing to accept arguendo that the birth certificate is the hagodas edus of our kodesh shalakum. I'll buy that for the sake of the argument. Even if the birth certificate is a hagodas edus of our kodesh shalakum, Thesis in Gittin says that the namonis of our kodesh is because lemari nafshayu, and Thesis calls it a chazoko gru'ua. Non-Jews don't have all that much credibility, and even lemari nafshayu isn't such a strong svara. Therefore, if you have the nemonis of our kodesh shalakum, which resolves itself into a chazoka gerua, and you juxtapose that against the cheskas hanhoge, it seems to me that the cheskas hanhoge is a stronger bearer, and our kodesh shalakum should not have nemonis neged a bona fide chazoka. Point number two, another question. For other rishonim, not Tosfos, our nemonis of our kodesh shalakum is predicated upon dina de malchusa. Dina de malchusa is fine if you're talking about shtoris that are oil in Arkoish Alakum. You want to know whether you can rely upon the notary signature. In Dine Momenes, Arkoish Alakum cannot extend to Psule Kohol. They don't have no moment to tackle somebody to go, and that point is made, I think, by the son of the Chalkish Akim, the footnote, or whatever. According to the Rishonim, they maintain that Arkoish Alakum is predicated upon Dine Malchusa. Clearly, the birth certificate as a Hagodah, invalidating this relationship that assures that the child is kosher with Kohol certainly would not be admissible. Yes. My entire point was that Rambam Simin Dalet Sifkov Tes seems to say that on all who said the need that my son is my son doesn't have namonis afterwards to change the statement even with an amasla.
Yes.
And now you have the chazok of Nikor Chachrel. We've got the chazok. Again, go in order. First of all, we got the chazok. Now we have Nedechot Neged Chazok. Right? Wait a minute. Only the argument is he's better than just Nedechot who has no Nemons Neged Chazok. It's the father saying this isn't my son. And the father has Nemons to say this isn't my son. My answer to that was that when there is a chazok, the father doesn't have Nemons to say this isn't my son. So we're back to square one where we have Nedechot Neged Chazok. It's not a matter of an amasla. We have a chazok that tells me this is a son, and now we have an Eidechot who's being made connected to chazok, and he's not the privileged Eidechot, namely the father who's being made beneath the mamzer. No, he's not. No. I carefully said that there are two sociological situations. One in which everybody in the community knows that this was an adopted son, in which case there's no chazok. Well, and there are other situations which are not at all difficult to postulate. You have people who adopt a child, and 6 months later, they travel 3,000 miles away, and they relocate in the community without telling anybody that the child is adopted. And in the first community, everybody saw this woman every day of the week, and knows that she wasn't pregnant, knows she didn't go to the hospital, and they even sent out notices saying that we have a new arrival, and it was clear to everybody that it was an adopted arrival, so that there's no chazokia that this is their child in community number one. But in community number two, the child is assumed to be the natural child of this couple, and nobody remembers anymore. What adoption agency? Who says there was ever an adoption agency? Private adoptions don't go through agencies. It is, again, it is not inconceivable that thus exists. What I'm trying to do is to lay out various study heter that may exist. I mean, not all exist in every situation. I mean, dein minei, and where it applies, and where it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. I think that this has more practical applications in the other case I gave you before, namely the gerus situation, where you now suddenly have a dos baldin that the gerus was invalid to start with. But put that aside. Point, yes?
Why do we assume that the father is fighting against the mother? He says that the child is adopted. Doesn't go against the
test of Hanukkah,
because if an adopted child
will choose God. What does the Nocho HaHarepa mean? We know that the child is floating around with this woman. The Chazok establishes a maternal relationship. Not just that this woman is taking care of the child, that's called an adoptive parent, but that this is a natural mother, not simply a caretaking mother. Point number three. Just mentioning this again in passing, the Tshuva of Kiveger that is in interesting with regard to this point specifically, the nemonos of the father to say that this is his child. Rabbi Kiveger makes a tziruf of a number of shitas and applies them in the case that was brought to him. He's first mitzar of the shitas to say that the father has nemonos to say this isn't my son, only to be mevaker another son. That's Kiveger Shal Mikra. That's where it's derived from. The din of Yakir, he is recognizing a junior as being the Bechor, which means that the senior must, by definition, be a mamzer. And second sheet in Rishonim, that he has nemonis only if the wife is not makrish. In these circumstances, that's not going to pertain, because you're not going to have a situation in which the father says it's adopted and the mother says it's natural. And number three is Shilti Geburin, who says the father is nemon only if he says it is my son, but he is also a mamzer. Now, the question is, does Rabbi Kiveger mean you can rely on the tziruf of only all three, and here one of them is missing, or could you rely on the tziruf of two out of the three alone, in which case the father wouldn't have them on this? But again, I mentioned that only in passing. I think that the other point is more significant, namely that here the father wouldn't have any of them on this in any event. Okay. Yes. One more tzad. Yes. That's what we're going to come to when we're finished with all of this. Once we can permit the child to walk down the aisle, we have the problem of what to write in the ksubah. We haven't gotten to the chuppah yet. Yes.
Within the ksuba later, but we're going to write it, wouldn't that be a problem?
If the father has no nemonis, I would have no problem writing Pliny ben Pliny. You scream, it's not your son. If you have no nemonis, I didn't hear a word you said. My problem will be when you have a child who is known to be adopted. Everybody knows he's adopted. There is no chazoke, and therefore it's not a question of nemonis. Then what do you do with the ksuba? That we will come to as soon as we finish this. Tzad number three, to be matir without further questions. Yes. The first thing he said was that the father is nemon to say that this is not my son only when he is being mevaker somebody else. Tzad number three, the third consideration that may apply in some adoption situations to be matir the child l'kohol. And that is the Beis Shmuel, the end of Siman Vov. I doubt that this will apply in New York, but adoptions do take place in other cities as well, and the Beis Shmuel says very clearly that there's a problem of Sulei Kol with a Shtuki only if there is a mamzer who is muchzak b'ir. In other words, the Veshmul was saying that the whole takon of shduki, the whole gezeres, the rabbanon, is based only upon the concern that the father may have been a mamzer, in which case his son is also a mamzer, and that there is no chash of an incestuous relationship. That has the advantage, an obvious kulul halacha, that if you're living in a town that does not have a known mamzer, there is no mamzer who is muchzak in the city. Adoptions that take place in that city wouldn't present a problem at all for the Beis Shmuel. The Nebuch Yosef and Rashi do disagree. They maintain that there's a chash of incest as well, but there are many Achronim who are machriya according to the Beis Shmuel. I don't think it'll help you in New York, because although I don't know of any known mamzerim in New York, I suspect it won't take more than a couple of telephone calls to discover that there is an individual who is muhsik in the city as a mamzer, as being the product of a second marriage in which the first marriage was not dissolved by divorce. Very simple. Okay. In a city in which there's no mamzer, that's muhsik, no? So shtuki is kosher. Lekol, maybe not Lekul. Yes, yes. The Bishul says that there's no din of shtuki for psul kol. And remember, the psul shtuki exists on two levels. One's the psul kol, and the other's the psul kuhunda. I'm not even talking about psul kuhunda. If this is a female, she wants to marry a kohen, an adopted female who wants to marry a kohen is going to have additional problems. Yes. Yeah, they say that shtuki is a takana, not only because the father may be a mamzer, but because the mother may have committed incest. And maybe a korah. In which case, the fact that there's no mamzers mostly in the city doesn't mean anything. She had a brother in the city, she had a father in the city. Yes, there will be one case in which lachola deis is no problem. This is a woman who has no relatives in the city. And there's no mamzer in the city. She's an unmarried girl living by her... she's a geiris. Geiris said that it's unlikely she's having a child in the first place. As a penuria. But, you know, we're having a... Okay. Or she was not a nusla. No, she was raped. All right. The situation in which you have a city in which there is no mamzer who is muhsik as a mamzer, and you have an unmarried woman who has no relatives in the city, yes, they're according to everybody, there wouldn't be grounds to be cheshish, and the shtuki would be kosher legal, as distinct from kosher legal, which we'll see a little bit later. Now, point number four, another side. And that is Beis Shmuel and the Taz, both in the end of Simin Vov. Both of them are machriya that even if the mother doesn't say lekosher nevalti, if there are two roivs, roiv ir and roiv siya, which I'll try to define in a moment, the child is mutter bekohol. The Shmaitze is makel even further and says that in cases such as this, one can rely even upon a single roiv and you don't need two roivs. Now, the problem is, if you go back to terms of the Takon of Chazal, the question, and then again, I don't want to, there's a three-way machlokes rishonim with regard to what a pnuyo that becomes uferes, what is required, but in the Gemara you find the problem, in terms of the shashtuki, they were afraid that the woman may have gone to the bayil, in which case there's no call the parish ruba parish, but a call to look from Aksudomi. Therefore, they required, in addition to her kosher nevalti, two roivs. Take that sheet and restraint. That lechatchil, at least, you need le kosher nevalti plus two roivs. Roiv ir and roiv siya, roiv of the caravan. In effect, what they did was, even if we're dealing with ozlo ihu ligabaihu, in which case we don't, roiv ir is meaningless if she goes to the bayil, but maybe, she was nizana not with somebody in the city, but somebody from one of these caravans, in which case we then had either a kind of a sex fake or we have something else, whatever it is. The point of fact, what Chazal did was to take into account two separate possibilities. One, that the boyil came from the city, B, that he came from the siya or from the caravan. And if you look in at least the Loshna Mechaber in one of the Siyatim, dealing with these shilas. The Machaber talks about a case where the woman goes outside the city and she is mezana, and now we don't know who she'd be mezana with one of the bnei Ha'ir or with one of the people in the caravan. Now, the Binyan Tzion HaKadosha, so Rabbi Yaakov Edelman here, Simon Yudches, the Binyan Tzion says that two rois are loy shchiach bizmanenu. And all the Achronim, I suppose, quoting from the Sechemet, who quotes the Binyan Tzion, but they all repeat this, that two rois are loy shchiach bizmanenu. And I find that extremely difficult to understand. It may have been true in Kalsaru, where Rabbi Yaakov Entlinger was the Rav. There were no caravans in Kalsaru. It was a city, not a village, but a relatively small city. I don't think it was a tourist attraction. So the only rave that you had was the rave of the city. However, Bizmanenu, any city that has a train station, seems to me that it has two raves. It has the rave of the city, and it has Avery and Bishovin. You go to Grand Central, you see people coming and going all the time. They're coming from out of town, they're going out of town. What's that different from a caravan? Who says that the second rave has to be outside the city? The second rave can be in the city as well, as long as there are people, mechutz l'ir, who come into the city. And I think that's Muchach from Mechaber and Simon Vov, Sif Yudches. It seems to me that we do have two raves in virtually every place, except perhaps some little village, someplace who knows where, and even there I question it, because what village isn't on a highway? And a highway has caravans going by every day of the week. It's not as things were once upon a time. The net result is, it seems to me, that we generally have two rois, the rois sharing in this case are the Akum. The Akum are all sharing insofar as Tzule Kol are concerned, so that we have, it seems to me, two rois. After the Shema, you don't need two rois, one rois would be sufficient, but if we have two rois, it seems to me that that is in and of itself enough to be matzir. Then point number five. And point number five, or the fifth tzad, is based upon a kasha of the Neidib Yehuda. Now you have the tshuva of Neidib Yehuda in the package. The Neidib Yehuda asks a question. The Neidib Yehuda asks a question that somebody raised here a little bit earlier, and that is, why is an Asufi Bimitzius, who is not an Asufi Bidin, not Tosel Lekol as a Shtuki, or to rephrase that, if we have a Tinek Mushlach Bishuv, but we see that he is a Nimoel, we see that he is a Vorin that's straightened out, all of those are simonim that the parents did not intend him to die of exposure or malnutrition, and we say there he is kosher l'shuk. Why isn't he at least nasufi? Fine. So why is he better? Why isn't he at least mishtuki? Why didn't Chazal regard him as the case of a Pnuyoshinis Avro who didn't say Lakoshishin Nivalti? The Pnuyoshinis Avro isn't surrendering her child or exposing the child to die of exposure. The Pnuyo doesn't want the child to die, and Avro Pikein, the child has it in a Vishnuki. And the Neidib Yehuda answers very simply. The Neidib Yehuda says that there is no reis of znus insofar as an Asufi is concerned. When we find an Asufi, we are not cheshish for znus. In the case of a Shtuki, we have a Pnushinus Avro, we know there was znus. In znus, we're worried about who was mezana with her. Clearly, whoever was mezana with her wasn't exactly an upstanding member of the community. It may have been an incestuous relationship for Rashi and Debut, it may have been a mamzer, whatever. In the case of an Asufi, we have no reason to suspect sexual misconduct. We do have reason to suspect that the child may be a mamzer, because otherwise why is he being thrown into the street? But if you eliminate that shash, as evidenced by the fact that the parents were concerned, didn't want the child to die and took precautions that it shouldn't die, if we know that the parents didn't want the child to die, we have no reason to suspect that there was znus of any kind whatsoever. A situation, and again, going back to the Chafesh Yankiv, the Shoyel asked the Shaila after the war, you suddenly have children showing up, we don't know who their parents are, they come straight out of the DP camps, who are they? They're all Shtukis. to which the answer was perfectly obvious. I mean, this was an amaratus. The question was not amaratus. Yisaimim don't have a din of a shtuki. Even if the Yisaimim, no one remembers who their parents are. There's no reisa. You have to, in order to have a din of a shtuki, there's got to be a reisa of some sort. The mere fact that a child doesn't know who his parents were doesn't mean that he is a shtuki. We have a reisa when an unmarried woman appears before us and she is pregnant. Or she comes with a child in tow and no husband. That's a reisa. We know that she's a pnuyish mishabro. But if we have no reason to suspect that there was nus in the first place, then there is no reisa. So that's the answer that Nevi'ah gives to this question. You have the discussion other acharonim, but if we take this as the parrots to the kasher, then I go back to the point I made before, and I'm simply approaching it from a different angle. If the agency does not have nemonis, then the agency has no nemonis lekula and no nemonis lechumra. If an aid posel appears and is made, we don't hear a word he says. If the agency doesn't have nemonis, we have no reason, mitzvat hadin, to assume that the child is the product of a pnuyish nisavra. How do we know where the child came from? The child may very well be an asufi who doesn't have the psul kol of an asufi. There are some parents who can't support their children and surrender them to adoption agencies. That's normal. That's not snus. Hence, if the adoption agency has no nemonis, we don't have a reis of snus. If we don't have a reis of snus, then there should be no problem with regard to the child in the first place. We haven't reached the point of seeing that there's a pnuyish nisavro who must say kashrut avalti and for whom we require two rois, etc., etc. If there wasn't a child in the first place, if it wasn't a shtuki, you didn't need the kashrut avalti and you didn't need the two rois. It's another tzad to be matched. So far, I gave you five different studies. I don't think we can go on forever. Let me briefly, very briefly, I won't go into it. I intend to spend the whole time on this, on the next point. Point number six. Point number six is what I think everybody is quoting. I think that's the thought that most people seem to be relying on, although I can't prove it because there's very little in writing. And that is related to the Yehuda and the Shev Shmeister. This Shaila isn't a new Shaila by any means, only it didn't exist in the same format. The Shaila that you have in the Yehuda is the typical case, only instead of an adoption agency, we have a woman who is unmarried, she gives birth, and now the child wants to marry. In the Yehuda's case, the mother wasn't here, the mother was long since dead. 25 years later, the mother has died in the interim. The chiddush of the Yehuda is that here we have, pardon me, a simple case of kol the porish, Meruba Parish, and that here Chazal were in Geyser. Chazal were Geyser only when we have a Shaila with regard to the mother, because with regard to the mother, we have a Dilma Ozu Iyu Legabayu, and for her it's a Kofalukum Asamakadomi, but if she is Kofalukol, then the child also has to be Kofalukol. But when we're not being done on the mother, we're only being done on the child, it's a simple call to Parish, Meruba Parish. Now, I had wanted to explain why I think adoption agencies don't parallel the case of the Neid of Yehuda. We're not going to be able to do that today. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Shmeitze, and the Shmeitze also is not here under those circumstances, but Lav Mitameh on the basis of a different but similar line of reasoning. The point that I finally wanted to make after the Arichus, which I will not give you, is that it seems to me that the adoption agency is in and of itself a mokum kavua, and that we are not dealing with the same case as the Shmeisa and the Neid of Yehuda, and that's why I think the point number six isn't the tzad eter at all. Now, let me make the point very, very briefly, and that is that Tzitzis and Suda says, Vov, Tzitzis says that a child in its own house is kavua. The house is a mokum kavius. And the Shmeitzer sees that the Shmeitzer quotes the Beis Meir, who takes that point and uses it as an argument against the Neid of Yehuda. I'm not interested in that. But in point, it's a fact. The Tzitzis says the house is a mokum kavua.
The house that the child was born in?
Yes. The house the child was born in is definitely a mokum kavua. If you know where he was born, that's a mokum kavua. What I'm going to argue is that I can make the point in several different ways. I can make the point with a chemda shloimen, who disagrees with Neviyud, but the Chemda Shloime, it's a very interesting choosing. It deals with a woman who was promiscuous, and she had been living with a Torah. And he even adds that he had been living with her as he lived with many of the Aniim in his little village or whatever. So it was a very promiscuous relationship. This wasn't even a situation in which there was any social status attached to it. However, this woman has a child, and she is Ben Ha'akum. She's acting as a non-Jewish woman to all intents and purposes. On her deathbed, she tells the daughter that you are Jewish and that you should go find other Jews and don't be like your mother, become a Misha Sherer. And lo and behold, the girl goes and does so. And she finds Jews, and she's strong now, and she wants to get married. But now the problem is, the mother was a Fnuyish Nisavro, and she's now a Shtukis, and the mother didn't say, well, the mother has told her that the father was the Boritz, who was a non-Jew and who was Kosher. Now, according to the Nedib Yehuda, there's no problem here because the mother is dead. This is the Nedib's case. The Chemda Shloime disagrees with Nedib Yehuda. I'm not going to talk about why, but he makes another point entirely. He makes a point and he says that as far as the mother was concerned, there never was a child with regard to the mother because the mother didn't care about Isuri. The mother, you didn't have to be down on the mother. Is she Mutter Bakol? Is she not Mutter Bakol? Is she Mutter Bakol? Is she Mutter Bakol? She's not asking Shilas. The Shilas don't interest her because she is a Mutkeres, Lahol Isurim Shabbatayr. The only one who is interested is the child. The child is always a Barish. I'm called the Barish Ruben Barish. Because of the child to whom the Shiloh is Negea. Now, I can make the point independently, but the point I'm making is the point in reverse. If you are dealing with an adoption agency in an ear in which everybody are Yerveim and Shlemi, including the adoption agency, then clearly the adoption agency is concerned with regard to the identity of any foundling that's delivered to their custody. At that point, the vlad may well be a porish. Now, called a porish, a porish. The child's being brought. Where's he coming from? The big wide world. We're interested. We have to know who he is. If you go back to the case of the Mekulin, if you find Bosa Bashuk, it's called a porish. You go into the Mekulin, it's called Kavua. What if a guy goes to the Mekulin and takes it out of the Mekulin? What kind of halacha does it have? I go to the Mekulin. It's Kavua. The child is noilid in the Mokum Hakviz. What if the goy goes to the Mekulin? Now, it all depends where the sophic is known. In this case, what is if the adoption agency couldn't care less? The adoption agency is... So when is the sophic known? When I go to the adoption agency. In the adoption agency, this is now the Beit HaTinuk. The Tinuk, this is the Tinuk's house. That Tinuk is the Mokum Kavu. It's in its Mokum Kavius. This is the Mokum Kavius of the Tinuk. If I had gone to the Tinuk's house where it was born, Taisus tells me it's a Kol Kavua. If to the agency it's not a Shaila at all, so it's like somebody who has no Nemonis, if they don't have no Nemonis, so the question didn't arise when it came to their custody, and they are now in the Mokum Kavua. In there, the Goy takes it to his house. So that's clearly a Mokum Kavua. What could be a Mokum Kavua more than that? Even, you know, I'm going now to the Beis Akum, I'm taking it from the Akum. Therefore, I find it very hard to use the Nedib Yehuda and the Shmaitze as a Yisur to be Matir, the Shtuki Shaila, with regard to adopted children. Because it seems to me that if you go to the agency and take it from the agency, and the agency doesn't have them on this, now earlier I said it creates all kinds of coolness. I stick with that. But indeed, if you're going to apply the Nedib Yehuda and the Shmaitze, it seems to me that that is not applicable for the very simple reason that this is now the Mokum Kvius of the Vlad, and we now have a Kokavua Kamatlam Akadomi. I had really wanted to analyze the Nedib Yehuda and the Shmaitze in greater detail, but I think we'll dispense with it.